I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey everyone, it's Mark from Guitar Nerds here. Just wanted to let you know that we recorded an awesome podcast this week with Ed from Beachlang sitting in, telling us all about his experiences at the Reading Festival and talking about Beachlang's gear and their visit to the Marshall Factory recently. Unfortunately, we had a bit of a technical mix-up with the audio recorder, so about the first minute or so of this podcast is missed off. It's mainly just Joe Branton talking nonsense, so don't worry about that.
The blame for the technical
your mic is not recording, so people probably can't hear what you're saying. Anyway, so there is you've missed out a lot of the Joe Branton content by missing the first minute, so that's a good thing. And yeah, hope you enjoy the rest of the podcast. Cheers. Bye.
I met up with Ed maybe, what, like 2 hours before you played? Or yeah, maybe 3 hours before you played, something like that. And I watched Beachlang, and then we went and got something to eat.
Okay.
And then we caught the last couple songs of Modern Baseball. And then we got on the train and came back to Brighton.
Does Reading still have a punk stage?
Yeah, the pit
used to be the
concrete jungle.
It's the pit now, I believe.
The Sunday was not a very punk rock lineup, I guess.
What, even on the punk stage?
Really,
it's just a stage now, isn't
it? Yeah, it is. I mean, it was, I tell you what, though, it was very interesting. So, like, I spent a bit, like, most of the time hanging out with Ed, and we were backstage a lot of it, and we watched Modern Baseball, who are such a great band, and they pull off my favourite thing for a band to pull off, in that they are a full Fender band.
Okay.
So
all Fender amps.
Fender amps. So
Gretsch drum kits.
I don't know. It was just a house kit. I don't know what it was, but super bassman, bass head. Brendan was using one of the guitar players was using a DeVille, I think, which conked out towards the end.
I think he had a 212 DeVille.
Yeah, I think so as well. And Jake, the other guitarist, was using, I think, the same amp. I think they were both using DeVilles.
I think it was the same thing. I only saw Brendan's, and he kept having a banger.
Yeah, a telly, and I mean, it was just a full Fender band, and I just love seeing that. But one thing that I thought was really, really funny was, like, all the amps for the following bands were all, like, lined up backstage ready to go on, and it was all Boogie.
Really?
It was all Boogie, like all dual Rex.
Is this on in the pit stage?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
In the bass rig?
I saw an Eden bass rig for another band, but what they had as the back line, they had Ampeg SVT.
Yeah.
And they had a few, they had a Fox AC30 as back lines, a few Marshalls, so I think they were kind of, I think they just kind of scattered it for the house back line was.
How did it work for you guys? Did you take your own back line, or did you?
So we used their back line, just out of convenience, purely out of convenience.
Yeah, yeah.
And we had a pretty short slot with short changeovers, so just to make it easy, we kind of just said, whatever's on stage, we'll just plug into that.
We should talk, really, now we're kind of wrapping up the Reading stuff, we should talk a bit about Beachlang, and we'll get to Reading from your perspective. But for people who don't know, who are Beachlang and what do you do?
Well, we're indie rock band from Philadelphia. We started playing about 3 years ago, gigging about 2 years ago. Yeah, just a little over 2 years ago. And things, you know, we got pretty lucky. Started doing longer tours, bigger tours, got to come over here several times. So we were over here in June, we did a few festivals, and then spent the past month, all of August, just doing festivals around Europe, around the UK, ending at Reading this past Sunday, which gave me the opportunity to come down here and spend some time with you gentlemen.
So how, what time did you play and where did you play?
We did the lockup stage. I think we were like 3:30.
Yeah, like
a little.
Three, four, it was long.
Jay turned up around 1, and then we kind of hung out a little bit.
That was when the festival kicks off, right when Jay arrives.
Absolutely,
it's actually for me
at least. Yeah, 115 bands, but forget it. It's all about Jay. But yeah, it was good. So we a few festivals this summer. We were opening the stage, which is always, you know, a little cold and nervous to do when people are kind of trickling in and getting out of their tents. But yeah. But it was nice to be. I think we were 4th or 5th on that day, and yeah, with how short the changeovers were at Reading Leeds and how many bands, they just kind of fire through the acts. So it's pretty efficiently run festival given the magnitude, given the 7-8 stages.
What's your changeover time?
I think that was just 20, which
is not a lot when you got to get a band off.
Is not a lot when you got to get especially a band off. You got to get on, yeah. Line check.
It's not a lot of time at a pub, let alone a
especially exactly. when you're following Mikey Way.
Oh really?
Yeah.
Mikey Way's band was on.
Did he still have? Is he still using his short scale Mustang?
He was not.
Oh, really?
No, he wasn't. He was using a jazz bass, I think. I don't know. We only saw it from the back.
Oh, wait, Mikey Way is the bass player, isn't he? Yeah. Sorry, yeah. I was
he's
thinking
got those
Gerard
large
Way.
Silver flake.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Mustang with the speed stripes.
What band was that? Water Parks.
Water Parks. Yeah, yeah, they were on before us. I don't think he's their full time bassist. I think from what I've heard, their other bass player was injured, so he's doing this tour with them. Somehow there's a connection with management or something, and.
So,
set up.
So what did you get to use then as backline if you used?
At that fest, I used an Ampeg 810 and then an SVT 2 Pro.
And how does that differ from... You play Orange?
I play Ampeg back home.
Oh, right.
Yeah, just have an old classic V4 and then a 610 guitar cab that was modded by the previous owner into a bass cab, and it's this big, boomy box that has a lot of great low-end punch. So it's exactly what I love back home. So coming over here, you know, when we get backline that we take on the entire tour, I use an Eden 410 and then an Eden... World Traveler 500, which is great, but not the punch that I'm used to as back home.
Sure.
At festivals using the A10s, it's great. Getting back to that.
Very different sound, the Eden stuff to
exactly
kind of different.
Yeah.
But their new series of stuff is really interesting. The new Valve preamp range that they're just now sort of starting to put out. Their website has just been updated with the new stuff. They brought it to the London Bass Day this year. And I think it's just about to start hitting sort of retailers and things, but
nice.
It looks much, much better. So they're doing a completely solid state version, a valve preamp and a double valve preamp. They explained it
but
to
two,
me.
But two preamps in there.
Yeah, but it's
than...
like a pre, no, it's like a preamp that goes into a power amp that goes back into something. Yeah, there's a diagram of what it does on the top.
Okay.
But it looks very good. The new stuff looks great. I'm really actually excited and interested in it. If they could just stop putting carpet on the cabs, I would be fully
that's,
into
that's
it.
Your feedback, Ed, when you go and speak to them.
Unfortunately, we just had the tour of the factory, so I wish I had more critical info back then. But you know, the carpet, I'm not too thrilled about the carpet as well.
I quite like it.
I feel like I'll get rug burn whenever I'm picking it up or not, you know? But I mean, it's for the 410s are small, they're compact, and they're, for how small they are shockingly loud.
Yeah.
So it's great. I didn't have to push the head that much.
The 3 heads that they've got are a 500, a 700, and a 1200 watt head.
That's pretty powerful.
Yeah, which is like a lot of headroom. So
I was gonna say I was using the 500, and you know it was never, you know it was never quiet enough. So it was great.
Yeah. How about for your guitar? What'd you play?
So I kind of made my own custom Fender. I'm not sure if you've ever talked about Warmoth on the podcast before.
Oh, really? So yours is Warmoth. I've seen it, and I've seen that you've done that classic punk rock thing of not having a tone control.
Well, who uses it anyway? You know, am I right? Just one more thing to smash up my hand.
You don't need it.
It's correct to the year that it was made. It doesn't matter if I don't use it.
So I picked up just a white body from them. I can't remember what wood it was. This was 5 years ago, and I wasn't terribly particular about it anyway. So I did that, and then it's cool. They mock out the pick guard for you, so you can get everything totally customized. So I just had the one volume pot. I had the input jack routed out of the side of it.
That's a nice mod.
Yeah. Because then I use, you know, with the right angle plugs, you can just kind of, it's just flush right on there.
Yeah.
So there's nothing on that plate then other than the volume control.
Yeah, just the volume control.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, I got one of those badass bridges. And then Seymour Duncan quarter pounders. Exactly. Yeah.
Right, this is, well, it, I was, I thought when I saw it, that it, I thought at first that it was a Chris Aiken. But have you ever seen those, the Squire Chris Aiken P basses?
He's the strung out bass player.
Gotcha. Yes.
The difference between your one, I think yours is a maple neck with black block inlays, and
it
his
is
perloid block inlays, and he has a mirror plate rather than you have a perloid plate. But but his is white as well. So other than sort of the
aesthetic
slight changes, it's kind of straight up like that
for the neck. For the neck, I got the Geddy Lee bass neck.
Oh,
I just
really?
Picked that up. So I got everything from Warmoth, wired it all together myself, and then got a Geddy Lee neck off eBay because you got to have that Fender logo up there. And that's nice. It's a thinner neck, so you can kind of like wrap around it better. It's just more comfortable to play.
It's the thinnest, I think, in terms of like Fender basses. It's probably the thinnest thing they've ever produced. It's like
exactly.
It's like a pool cue.
Yeah, I had one for a while, a Geddy Lee.
Geddy Lee?
Do you remember that? Yeah, but I couldn't down-tune it and still set it up properly because the neck was so sort of thin. So gave up in the end. But it's a great bass. It feels great to play the Gideon.
I was gonna say, and it's that's what I love about the most is just how thin, I feel like I'm playing a guitar. So the first time we came over here, May of 2015, Jay lent us all his gear, which we used, and I use your P bass, American P bass.
Yeah, your white
P bass. Yeah, and it was great. But the first show, when I picked it up, I'm like, I feel like I'm holding a baseball bat. This thing is so thick. And that whole tour, it was only like 2 weeks, that tour, but it was so difficult to get used to, just that difference in neck shape.
Yeah.
And after that, I'm like, you know what? I'm going to go through the house and fly with my own.
So did you bring your stuff with you this time around?
I did, yeah. We've been over here 3 times since then, and I've always just brought it everywhere. You just carry it up to the plane and say, your problem now, find a spot.
And it's really a much better idea. I've still got to give you back your smashed up case.
Yeah, thanks for that. Yeah. This is a long running saga of Joe borrowing my stuff and breaking it, so it's fine. So how was Reading for you?
Reading was great. Leeds was a little bit more messy. I'm not sure how much I should get into it, but Leeds was a little more messy. Went on a few minutes late just due to a lot of kind of technical issues.
Great stage manager at Reading.
I think that's where we'll leave it diplomatically.
Is that what your official title was? Is that
No, it wasn't me at all. It was a great stage manager. It was actually Phil Mills, who lives in Brighton.
Shout out to Phil for making things smooth. He made the changeover great. He took care of things well. So just having that coordination really sets the mood, especially with only a 20-minute changeover. You really need someone who's efficient with getting you on, getting the other band off. And Reading was a blast. You know, a lot of people were there. Just its proximity to London. Everyone said from the beginning, Reading will be the more enjoyable festival, and it was by a mile.
It seems to be the one that's picked up the reputation. I know it's like an older festival as well, isn't it? And then Leeds kind of got tagged on.
Yeah, but I agree. But I always thought it's weird because Reading is a hole, and Leeds is a really nice place. it just seems like the wrong way round.
It's been a long time since I've been to Reading.
Well, I mean, why would you?
I didn't realise it was that close to the station.
You what, mate?
Sorry, Matt.
I said I had no idea it was so close to Reading Station. I assumed it was I assumed it was a bit like Glastonbury. In fact, it was called Reading Festival, but it was like miles outside of Reading in some sort of massive farm. But it's like a 20-minute walk from the station. This actually makes it much easier to get to.
That's how I got there when I went in 2001. I think we got the train. So.
2005 was the last time I went.
It wasn't. Last week.
Well, yeah, last week. But
2003 was the last time I went. Really? 99 was the first time.
99? I was 12. Oh. No, I wasn't. I would have just turned 12.
Yeah.
Anyway. So Beachlang as a whole, is there any other interesting gear that you think might be worth it? You know, if people have not heard the band and they're super interested in gear and stuff, is there anything interesting that anyone else in your band plays that it might be worth them checking out?
Yeah, certainly. So Ruben and James, they both got the endorsement from Marshall. So back home, they were sent 2 Marshall's Booze Breakers. Made in Milton Keynes, custom for them. They shipped them over, and that's all they use back home. Replaced a Vox AC30 and another. Ruben kind of always used just odd amps until they both got them, and it's so nice just having those two flank the stage and just that sound come out. It's phenomenal.
Is that quite recent? Because I think any videos I've seen, I've always seen that Vox AC30.
Gotcha. Obviously. Yeah, that was within the past 6 months, I think. It was right before our tour this past April. Yeah, our spring US tour. Yeah, they got them like right before that tour and just have been using them nonstop.
How about guitars?
Guitars, James uses an Epiphone Dot, and Ruben's playing a Gibson Les Paul.
Okay.
But Ruben just picked up one of those Fender... I forget what it's called. It's the one with the rosewood through neck, the rosewood complete neck with the red body. Custom.
Oh, the,
it was like a custom one.
That really rubbish band. It's a signature model.
Is it a signature model?
I don't think it's a signature model. It was a limited
Jimmy
edition.
Well, yeah. I am.
No, it's not. It's not a thin one. Is it a Tele?
No, it's a Strat. Oh, I should have said that first. Strat. Yeah, it's a Strat. Red Strat, rosewood neck, all the way through.
Okay. It's a solid rosewood neck, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Right. So it might be like a custom shop
like a
thing.
One piece.
I think it was a custom shop. Yeah. He just picked that up, so that's going to be... That was him. They flew back yesterday, and it's there waiting for him, so he's probably been playing it since the second he landed.
Am I right to think he was playing, like, a Sonics or something?
Yeah, he was using a Sonics for a while, which I think you diagnosed that. You came to our show in Brighton last May, and I think you were like, that's the really rare one.
Yeah, yeah. So we did a video on the YouTube channel of, like, the rarest loud motorbikes. No, no, wait. The rarest Gibson Les Pauls ever, or rarest Gibsons ever, and that's one of them. Basically,
wow,
and in a particular color, I can't remember which one it is.
He had like a silver,
yeah,
kind of
that's the one. The
silver
one,
yeah,
is the super rare one.
It's
and
insane.
Then, yeah, came to see you guys, and he was just playing. I was like, oh my god, that's never see those.
Yeah, he got that from a pawn shop. He got that and a Fender, I think twin reverb or something 410 for like $800.
Wow,
700 quid, something like that.
Yeah,
650.
If I remember rightly, there's less than 2,000 of those worldwide.
That's
something
insane.
Like that. So, yeah. Cool to see it in the flesh. Very, very weird indeed. So you talked about the guys using Marshalls.
Uh-huh.
You've recently been to the Marshall factory.
Yeah, just last week.
And I kind of wondered what that experience was like.
It was awesome. So we've been there in the past to pick up our backline, because Marshall, again, since they take care of us in the States, they lend us everything over here. So the Marshall and the Eden. So we've been there to pick it up before, seeing the showroom. But this time we were kind of like, hey, can we see where you make everything? And they walked us through. It was cool. So they started us in the carpentry room, which is where, you know, they go through all this several different steps to finish the wood, piece the wood together, sand the wood, and then they send it off to Tolex. And then they do the grills in a separate room. And then they took us to like the kind of the electrical room where they have this one giant computer machine that prints out all the motherboards, and they just have a slew of employees sitting there hand wiring everything together, just kind of like pinpoint soldering all the pieces together. It's all done there. It's incredible.
A lot of the models they make there are very much like hand tooled things. You know, obviously the Marshall range encompasses a whole load of stuff, and there's all the digital range and stuff, which is all made in China, and you know, all the practice amps and everything up through like when they were still doing DSLs and stuff.
Yeah, the DSL 40s still,
yeah,
in the
catalog? They've done, yeah,
15s,
yeah, and they've
and
actually
40s.
Released a handful of limited edition models recently with like a vintage Tolex and stuff.
They did that last year, didn't they?
No, that was a little bit before that. They've been out for a little while. White.
They did a white,
vintage,
a stealth
and
black one. Yeah.
So, yeah, all the stuff that's made in Milton Keynes, I guess, is the prestige stuff, isn't it? And they...
Exactly, yeah.
Did they talk through the custom ordering process? Because I know it's one thing that people don't know that much about Marshall is you can basically order anything. If you want a JTM 45 but in purple, you can get that. Mm-hmm. Did they speak about that much?
They didn't get too into it, but when we walked into the showroom, they have a big photo booth set up, and they were taking pictures of something they just made, like with red Tolex, something they made with blue Tolex, something that they had like custom grill cloth on, like a kind of like the cover art of the record for whichever band they were setting up for. But and that's where I was made aware that a company of that size can still mock up anything. They still have that much control.
Yeah.
And when we saw how everything is so personally pieced together, it makes sense that it's, you know, might as well give that option. So
you mentioned that they spoke a little bit about Jim Marshall when he was still around, just heading down to the factory floor and putting some stuff together.
Exactly.
And then, like,
yeah. So he was. Yeah. But until he died, he was still piecing together amps himself. It was great.
It's pretty awesome. Really.
And there
it's
was
amazing.
It was cool. Right in the front of the building was his old office, and he used to just sit in there and smoke cigars all day every day. And you know, he passed away in 2012, and we went in there now just to kind of take a look. They turned it into a conference room, and it still reeked of smoke.
Yeah,
it smelled like your grandpa's house, who's been smoking his whole life. It was That'll be in that room forever.
Yeah.
So that was cool.
I bet they're not really doing anything with that room either. Imagine it's like a little shrine.
Well, they kind of put it in a big conference desk, but they said they don't use it too often.
Right.
But it was cleaned up from his previous messy desk that they were saying.
Right.
Which I thought, I was surprised they kind of didn't want to keep that as a shrine. Yeah.
I think it's cool that so many elements of that part of the business are kind of still retained, really. You know, like the hand building of the amps and...
Certainly.
Finally doing some legacy models that, you know, people want, you know, looking at the JTM 45s and JCM 100s and Silver Jubilees and stuff. They're actually listening to kind of feedback, which I think has been a problem. That, as with all these companies, you know, they're striving to find the next big hit. And actually, a lot of the time, people want something that they can't get anymore that's super cool, you know. So.
Yeah, and that's, like, I mean, one of the things that we've always gone on about is, like, obviously you've got the Blues Breakers and stuff. The 1974X, which is the smaller one, is just like a Blues Breaker that you can kind of carry about and like use at home and like, because that's a fairly recent amp, I think, isn't it?
Yeah, and only like in a hand wired version. Like if they made that just a factory line standard model,
oh man,
they would mop up.
Yeah,
indeed. Yeah, that sounds like a super cool experience.
It was. Yeah, a company of that level being able to see how it's done was surreal. It was gorgeous.
Yeah, I bet. Should we do some news?
Yeah.
That sounds good to me. First up, sorry, it's because there's four of us. Go on then, do the news jingle. This is the only reason we keep him around.
News.
There we go. Got stolen out from under you. That's perfect. Thank you, Ed.
Right back to you, Joe.
It's been replaced.
It's done now.
It's done. So, first up, Reverend have announced a brand new line of guitars, the Sensei Humbucker Limited Editions. Matt Knight, have you got the details on the newest guitar from the brand that's kind of mopping up at the moment?
Yeah, so limited edition Sensei. So Sensei, for people who don't know, but know Reverend, is their kind of like pointy double cut Les Paul-esque guitar, I suppose. Usually with a hardtail.
Also, what the turtle's called Splinter.
No, Shredder.
No,
Splinter, you're right.
So, the Sensei Humbucker. Flame maple top. But every year they do one limited run, and this year the Sensei got that, and it's coming in a limited edition purple burst with a flame maple top. But they've decided to put a Bigsby on it as well.
It looks so super, yeah. Do you know what it looks like? It looks a little bit like I forget whose signature model it was. There was like a Yamaha or something that had pointy cutaways, was like hollow body and had a Bigsby on it.
A signature Gibson.
Oh, that's what I'm thinking of.
Yes, it does look a bit like that, yes.
It's got that sort of vibe, and as you'd expect, you know, the Reverend stuff is super cool.
It seems like every week we're talking about a new cool thing from Reverend at the moment.
They're the Electro Harmonics of 2016.
Yeah.
They're doing the right thing at the moment, aren't they?
They're kind of designing guitars, you know, in America, but sending them to really qualified factories. They're not just like farming them out to like a huge factory where they're being like mass produced. And I think it's key with Reverend is that every guitar then gets shipped back to the US where they're all checked. It's like a lot of companies, you know, anyone, you know, if we really wanted to, I'm sure we could find a factory in China and get them to build us a load of guitars. Problem is that we'd probably end up shipping them straight to a dealer, which means they never get checked and the quality control inevitably kind of dips.
Yeah.
But with these, they don't ship anything out that they haven't checked. And what I really liked was that every single one is hand-signed as well. So everyone on the back is hand-signed by someone at Reverend States.
Do we know on the spec on this, do we know what the humbuckers are in there?
That's just the Reverend ones that they've designed. I can't remember what they call it, but they're Reverend designed ones. But it features the unique bass contour control, which is their kind of like individual sort of tone shifting control that no other guitar has, which I think just goes through like a slightly different capacitor to a normal tone control and just gives you a little bit more control over the over the bass end. But you get all modern features, dual action truss rod, graphite nut, locking tuners, you know, and a guitar
locking tuners is a touch.
Yeah, I mean, $1099 US street price, so that's probably going to be about $899, I think.
Yep.
Yeah, once they land in the UK.
I did have a UK price, actually. I don't know. I'll dig it out. If people are interested, ask on the Facebook group and I'll find it. But they look fantastic. They don't look too dissimilar from the new Yamahas that came out.
No, the retro vibes. Retro vibe?
Revstar.
Revstar,
that's
where
the one.
Where do I get retro vibe from?
I don't know.
I mean, the thing about them is that they do generally feel really nice.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that's the thing. Those necks are like that kind of nice satin neck. They're a little bit chunky. You know, they do just feel right.
And the purple is one of the best finishes I've ever seen.
Oh, the purple and the green, to be honest. The green looks great. The green's got a proper sort of old, like, 60s Burnsy sort of vibe to it.
Really, like, really,
really
nice.
Into it.
The problem is with that, like, green's a weird colour
green's
guitars.
A great colour.
That sort of green is a weird colour for guitars.
No,
sorry,
you know what's
am I too
a good
quiet
colour?
Again?
Yeah, you are very quiet. Okay.
Sorry.
It's
Green Burst is probably the best finish.
Green Burst?
Yeah.
No, it's got to be a solid green. Well, Seafoam.
Surf
no,
green.
No, not light green, dark greens.
Here's a tip. If you own a guitar brand or a guitar shop, don't make green guitars.
Why
because
not?
They never sell.
They never sell.
They do not. Sherwood Green, probably the best colour in the Fender catalogue.
What's wrong with you?
They do not sell.
Never sell. That's why the Sonic Youth.
Ronaldo.
Was in Sherwood Green or something, and they discontinued it because it never sold.
Yeah.
Great guitar.
You're a fool.
No one likes green. Anyway, Friedman Amplification have announced a brand new pedal, the BEOD.
Oh, yes. It's cool.
What is it?
Well, Matt's, I'm sure, going to talk about the pedal. I'm just saying it's great that Friedman are kind of interested. I mean, it's a Marshall in a box, isn't it?
Yes.
It's the same. We know what it's going to be because of what
Friedman
did.
Well, it's a Friedman in a box.
It's a Friedman in a box, yeah.
But, you know.
But it's less than £200. I think it's wicked.
Matt, give us the lowdown.
Yeah. So these were announced sort of, or they were kind of teased, I suppose, at Winter NAMM. And they take the probably one of the best sounding amps I've heard in a long time, the BE100 Friedman head, and reduce it into a box. Now, the thing about the Friedman head is it's £3,199, I think, if I remember rightly, or £2,999.
That's pricey.
And 100 watts and 3 channels. So, like, as amazing as it sounds, it's also completely unusable to most people. And this is basically a condensed version into a box. Now, I think it's just kind of really clever because you can sort of basically build an amplifier in a pedal, because where you'd normally have valves, you just replace them with transistors that do a similar sort of thing. So if you're clever about the way you design the circuit, the drive and everything can respond in exactly the same way that it would with an amplifier. So effectively now you're getting that same sound but in a smaller pedal. I suppose the only different thing is that you're not going into, you might be going into a 112 or a 212, not necessarily a 412 or any cab that's going to be pushing out any sort of major air. But if you want that kind of effectively like modified high gain Marshall sound, that's basically, it's there to give it to you.
Do you know what the
like to AB this with the Marvel drive, I think.
Yeah.
Which control?
The tight.
Tight.
It's probably the same thing as resonance. So where you've got presence, which does all your top end sparkle, so that comes after the tone stack to put all the treble back in, that then is there to tighten up the low end. So it's also the same control, resonance control, on like the EVH 5150-100 Stealth. And yeah, it basically tightens up the bottom end because it can just get too flubby with too much gain.
Yeah.
And I think ultimately that's the big problem with those, especially when you're running through like a 412, for example, if you're using the head, it can just sound a bit too boomy in the bottom end, and that's just there to kind of tighten that.
Well, that's pretty good. A six control amp in a box, that's pretty thorough.
Yeah.
You're going to be able to really kind of, you know, hone your own sound out of that.
And ham-wide in America, as far as I'm aware,
I'm pretty sure
they're built in the same. I'm pretty sure they're built in the same factory. They build the amps. So the amps are built by a company called Boutique Amplified Nation or something like that, where they effectively build several different amp brands in one factory. So kind of similar to the way that the Oranges are built. That, you know, Orange and Ashdown used to be built in the same factory. So, yeah, done a similar way to that.
Ed, we never asked you about pedals. How could we have not done that on the Guitar Nerds podcast? This is the only thing that we talk about, apparently.
I was assuming we'd get to it later.
Yeah, okay. Well, we missed it. So, what do you guys do for pedals?
So, I use a Sans amp, as every bass player you've ever spoken to does.
Just the standard bass driver.
Yeah, standard bass driver. From there into a Fuzz Roses Gray Stash, which is a local guy in New Jersey. Yeah, I mean, he has some pretty big notoriety.
Yeah.
Which is great. And what's so great about that Fuzz, it has a mids control. So for bass, you can really kind of cut through. And then I sent that to a BBE Sonic Stomp, which is a Sonic Maximizer pedal.
Yep.
I've had it for years. I only just brought it back out this summer for this tour because I got a pedal board. So I just kind of, I had the room, so I pieced it together. Gives me extra definition, really like cuts through the mix. It's a great pedal.
And
does that stay on all the time then?
I'm sorry?
Does that stay on all the time?
It does. There are a few songs where I play fuzz all the way through instead of just triggering it. So when usually for that, I'll kill it just because it kind of gives it more of like a high-end kind of twangy type fuzz. I haven't fully dialed it in, and it's coming over here at first using it at home. I'm still trying to figure it out between the different rigs. But so I'll only kill it if it's a song that's strictly fuzz.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I mean, Sans Amp's always on fuzz for at discretion, and then... You know, the Sonic Stomp throughout the, you know, throughout the show mostly.
Are you DIing out of the DI or are you DIing out of the amp usually?
I'm not. I've never liked the tone of the DI out of the Sans amp. It's
That's
just
what
always,
you always said as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it's too much.
It was just always like too dry, too twangy, and I always hated it. And sound guys love it because it's one less thing that they have to do. They just plug right in. So the way I rigged up my pedal board, I kind of pushed my power supply right up against the Sans amp, so there's no way they can get in there. And they'll still always look and be like, "Oh, can I take it from there?" And it's like, "No, of course not."
Because everyone knows what they sound like. I think that's the key thing. It's
exactly.
Like if you were a sound engineer doing different bands every night, and you see a Sans amp, you'd just be like, "Yeah, I know how that's going to sound." So I'd go back to the desk and just EQ it the same every time.
It's probably the most constant piece of equipment that sound engineers see is the Sans amp.
Yeah.
So I can understand from that point. I never thought about it like that.
Yeah.
So that's my pedal board setup. Ruben's endorsed by Empress Pedals, so he has a bunch of different things from them. He uses their overdrive pedal. He has a buffer. He has their super delay. He has their super reverb. James uses their overdrive, their super driver as well, as well as a Fuzz Roses Dark Driving, which is just kind of like an extra boost. He clicks that on and off. And then I think we all use TU2s.
Of course.
But we're thinking about... I think Ruben was thinking about getting a Polytune. What do you...
Bad choice.
Yeah. What do you guys think? Bad choice? Okay.
You're asking the wrong crowd here, I think.
Yeah. I love the TU2.
Yeah.
TU3.
Just upgrade to the TU3. I heard the TU3s crapped out sooner.
Really?
I heard they weren't as...
Bunch of lies.
Yeah? Is that... Yeah? Okay.
We should, at this point, mention that Matt works for Boss. So,
okay. That's great.
If anyone's going to give you the lowdown on...
I was just about to applaud you guys for not having your foot in any camp, but evidently not.
We're fully impartial, except for when Boss comes up, and then we actually give him a harder time really wind Matt up. So,
gotcha. Well, Matt, no disrespect, but I have heard that the TU3s lose their computing tuning power sooner. I've heard of more TU3s breaking out sooner than TU2s.
I think what that is the TU2 is so good. The TU3 is excellent, but the TU2 is probably the best pedal ever made.
Do you remember when I to the TU3W? You know,
oh yeah,
get
the
that
TU3W.
Extra buffer
I haven't even heard of this. What's this?
It's the new Wazacraft version of the TU3.
So it's a black tuner pedal with a really high end analog buffer in it.
Wow,
it's also about $200 for a tuner.
Oh, but damn.
They're very good, though. Very good.
That's true. Well, hey, maybe once... I mean, I've had my same tuner for 7 years now, TU2. So
I know a guy in the UK who can sort you out. Don't worry.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah. Matt.
I'm glad I came on.
Do you remember when I did the test of destruction on the TU3s?
Yeah, we shouldn't talk about that now because we're probably going to reshoot that again for...
Oh, are we? We're going to reshoot that again?
Yeah, yeah.
All right, great.
Yeah, fine.
Next time we do it,
let's not take the battery,
put it in a jug of beer
with the battery in. That's what the problem was.
That's why it blew up.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Anyway,
can I just ask, did someone drink the beer afterwards?
Yes.
Okay.
Maybe.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This is the summer to expand your horizons. It's time to explore. But before you set foot out the door, set foot in the ultimate travel shoes from Allbirds. Like the breathable, silky smooth tree dasher, the responsive foam and extra grip of the tree runner, or the classic low-top look of the tree piper. Allbirds has a lightweight, ultra-packable shoe ready for whatever adventures you have planned. Boarding pass? Check. Passport? Check. The perfect travel shoe? Check. Find your perfect pair at Allbirds.com. That's Allbirds.com.
Maybe.
You Brits.
A whole jug of beer. So one last bit of news, and you guys might have to help me out on the pronunciation of this. I'm going with
ball gag.
It does look like ball gag. Balagua?
So if you go to this company's...
Oh, they're from PA, Ed.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
I was going to ask if it was French. And it was
they're from Phoenixville.
Phoenixville, Pennsylvania?
Yeah.
That's right near where I was living for years.
I'm going with Balagua.
No, it's the website. It actually links you to pronounce this name on YouTube, and it's someone saying it in Spanish, and I can't understand what it is.
If it's Spanish, it'll be Balaguer.
Balaguer. Okay, Balaguer. Let's go.
Yeah, I think Balaguer. It does sound a bit like Balaguer. These are cool guitars, and funny enough, because we were talking about Reverend, they basically do a very, very similar thing.
But they're even more affordable.
Yeah, well, this is the weird thing. So they, Phoenixville, Pennsylvania. So yeah, they design the guitars there, but they're built in a factory in Korea by a team of 15 people. I think they said 15 or 12 people. I think I read. Or you can have one built in America. They only build 12 a year.
Wow.
The guy.
Oh, I love the headstocks.
Yeah, it's a relatively new company. I think he said he started them in 2009. They are like awesome looking guitars, and their new one is the semi-custom series.
That's the we should mention that's the news item. They've just introduced.
No, keep it.
They've introduced the semi-custom series, which is kind of halfway between their two existing ranges.
Yeah, so it's like not the cheapest one built in their Korean factory, and it's not the one built in America, but it's built by like more experienced people in Korea.
That is complex.
Yeah, I mean the factory in Korea have been building guitars since 1985, so they've got quite a lot of experience in making these instruments. So you get nice high quality, and similar to the Reverend thing, they're all shipped back to America before they're sent out to the dealers, so kind of get high quality control.
So if these guitars are built in Korea by a guitar factory that's been producing guitars since 1985, so basically they're coming out of the old Fender, they're coming out of the old Squire factory, is what we're saying.
Well, they could. I mean,
probably
the thing is,
not is the answer to that.
You know, there's the video from a while ago with Chapman Guitars, and they're going around the World Guitars Factory, and you know, you see about six or seven other brands all being built in the same factory.
Yeah.
And it's the same. I think it's the same where you get like a lot of headphones and things built in China. You know, they're obviously several companies build their headphones in the same factory, because you effectively just give a spec to a factory, don't you? And you build them. I think the key thing with all of these is the fact they get shipped back to America. Before they go out, it would be so easy to send hundreds of guitars out to dealers without being checked, and obviously probably maybe quite a high rate of them would not be up to standard, whereas being able to check them again just means that you kind of filter all of that out.
So four body shapes, is that right?
Yeah, the Thicket I'm really into, which is their telly.
I really like
T-style.
The T-style guitar.
There's a $900, that's it, with a 4-month lead time, which is quite long.
That is quite long. But, you know, if you're going for something like this, because it is like there's some custom options and stuff, isn't there, in terms of finishes
and stuff like that.
Yeah,
that's right.
I really like, and you'll have to remind me of the name, the one that sort of looks like a Fender Offset, but with humbuckers.
The Growler.
The Growler. Have you seen my Growler? So, everyone go and check out, get onto a web browser and go and check out the Growler.
Don't put that into Google.
Don't type in, yeah, no, the Balagua. Balaguer
guitars,
ball gag growler.
Yeah, put in ball gag growler, and let's see.
We should probably,
what turns
we should probably
up.
Actually say how you actually spell the names, if people can actually.
B A L A G U E R.
Balaguer
guitars.
Balaguer.
This is from your home state. Do you know this person?
You know, so while you gents were talking, I did some Facebook research. We have a few mutual friends. So I just want to give a shout out to the local company. Phoenixville is really close to where I grew up, really close to where I've lived for years in Philadelphia. Nice small town, so it's nice to see something make an international press over here.
You know, don't worry about these big companies that are wooing you for stuff. Then just go for Balaguer.
Get yourself a bull gag.
Yeah, absolutely. Cheers, Joe.
They're, have to, we should get them to listen to this podcast and send you hate mail. I think that's how it works.
I really like the guitars.
Yeah, the guitars are very good. I think that offset, the growler, is phenomenal. Should we do Brand of the Week?
Oh, I'm into the...
Oh no! Go on, Matt.
I was going to say we also missed out the Hyperion, which is their kind of RD artist. So it's one of the only companies doing a Gibson RD shape.
That
and they only
amazing.
Do it in one color. They only do it in one color, and
it all
comes back around to gloss
best color.
Foam green.
Oh really?
No, it's silver.
Silverburst.
Really? Oh, it's not an option on their website anymore.
The ultimate of all colors.
Yeah.
But still, gloss seafoam green is even better.
Sounds very good. Very good. Let's do Brand of the Week. Joe Branton.
Brand of the Week.
There we go. I like this. Ed, can you be on every week and then Joe never has to sing?
Ed's cutting in.
Yeah. What time would this be for you? I guess it'd be like...
It doesn't matter. It doesn't
two,
work.
2 o'clock or something.
No, 5 hours back. So four. Six. What time is it? Nine? Okay, yeah, nine.
Yeah, yeah. We'll just get you on the Skype. Was. It's fine. Joe Branton, who's Brand of the Week this week?
This week on Brand of the Week, we're going to talk a bit about Kiesel guitars, who we have mentioned previously on the podcast. We spoke about them a bit a couple of weeks ago. I spoke about their custom shop when, in answer to a question, I think someone was looking for something within a certain amount of money, and I suggested them. And yeah, that made me want to come back to them and talk about them in the Brand of the Week, because of course last week we took a bit of a turn from the discontinued old 60s brands.
You'd be doing a lot of pawn shop guitars.
Yeah, yeah. And we moved away from that, and we did Strandberg, who are very, very modern, lots of fan fretted, extended range, 7/8 strings, headless, you know, sort of super modern guitars. And kind of sticking with that theme, I thought I'd talk about Kiesel, also known as Carvin guitars.
Okay. So Carvin, I obviously have heard the name Kiesel because there's been a lot of, you know, they keep popping up recently. Carvin is a name that I know from a long time ago.
Primarily
from amps, actually.
With the
Steve Vai signature and a few other bits and pieces. So what's the connection?
Well, the company was Kiesel originally.
Okay.
So they started 70 years ago, and they were making like mandolins and folk instruments, things like that. And the fella who set it up, Lowell Kiesel, was making all of those sorts of things. And I don't actually think the Carvin end of that, I can't remember exactly when. I think Carvin turned up in the late 50s or early 60s, and then started making sort of the guitar end of those things. And it wasn't, and essentially what happened is Kiesel became Carvin guitars at the height of the 80s, when Carvin were of course making amps. They were doing very well then, and at that time Carvin had started to introduce a custom shop for guitars. They invented a business practice, which I'll talk about in a bit, which made them very unique. And it's actually only last year that they changed the name back to Kiesel in honor of the original founder.
Carvin guitars, what, doesn't exist anymore?
No, this is the thing. You read about them and they're like, yeah, change the name back to Kiesel in 2015. It's like, yeah, it still says Carvin all over your website. In fact, you can choose whether the guitar you get made by them says Carvin or Kiesel.
Really?
So I'm really, really, it seems a little bit muddy, sort of where that is, but I think it was kind of like a bit of a in honor of the founder of this, we're now going back to the name Kiesel. Anyway, so what makes them unique is Carvin Kiesel cut out the middleman. They cut out all shops and that sort of thing,
because I know they used to have like distributors and shops, and
yeah, that's right, they came up with a whole new way of sort of doing business. They've always had a custom shop since the 80s, in fact, and they've tried all sorts of things. Their range of guitars is very, very broad. But they went exclusively with this 3 or 4 years ago, really, when sort of the internet has given them the ability to do this without
sell direct and be able to promote the guitar, probably more promotion than they'd get if they were in shops, to be honest. Because
this is what they're saying, because they do this directly, also they're able to they're able to charge effectively half the price that it would be. So the great thing about Carvin Kiesel guitars is that you can custom up your own Kiesel Carvin bass or guitar for, if you made a really posh one, like maybe $1,500.
What?
Yeah. If you keep everything quite standard on there and you're quite careful in your options, you could do one for $900.
Really?
A custom built one for $900.
And they build them in the States, do they?
That's right, yeah. So they're all, I think it's San Diego.
Yep.
I think
Saint
it's
Diego.
San Diego. Yes.
Yep.
A whale's vagina. I think it's there, but I can't remember exactly. It's either that or San Francisco, and I can't be bothered to look.
Okay, good. I'm glad you're there
very
with the
different
info.
Bits, but yeah. So, they're So a really cool custom shop. They do also they make guitars anyway that aren't necessarily part of the custom shop, and they sell those in, they have like a off the peg sort of line of guitars as well, so you can get things a little bit quicker. Their turnaround is really quick as well. You're looking at like 2 months.
Wow. What?
That's mental.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable.
I got one specced up recently.
Did you?
And it's quick.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. So they do.
You've ordered one?
We just spec one up.
I spec one up, and actually,
I'm
going to
talk you through
up.
The custom shop builder. In
okay.
It. Yeah.
And then
on,
after I saw Animals as Leaders, I was like, I really want seeing Tosh Nabassi's new 8-string. Yeah. I was like, that guitar is so awesome. It looks like a spaceship, and I want it.
It is great.
That is what we want from guitars.
But they have a guitars in stock side of their website, and they're all. They're still all weird. They're still all custom shops. They're just ones that they fancied making. So, for example, the first one on here is in a colour called Kiesel Racing Green, which is probably the best colour I've ever seen.
Again with the green.
That's what I'm saying.
It's a real slime green.
It's essentially slime green. But yeah, it's slime green, sort of super strat style guitar. And it's less than... Oh, because they've built it and it's not for anyone, they're knocking $200 off of it, so you can get it for $999, which is amazing. And they have...
Wow.
There's loads of stuff on here, loads of different things, fan-fretted things, headless things, basses, guitars, everything you could possibly want in the guitars in stock. So you could just peruse there, save yourself, averagely, between $200 and $300 saved on every model that's pre-built. But... the thing that I really like is their custom shop, which I think I should talk everyone through. We have time for me to do a quick...
Yeah, sure.
So you can go to their website, which is Kiesel. Kiesel is spelled K-I-E-S-E-L guitars.com. Go on there and have a look. And if you click on guitars or basses, if you're that way inclined, and you can flick through all of their base models, essentially, the starting point, the body shape, that you'll go for, and they have loads, not very creatively named. They have an A series, a K series, a V series, but loads and loads of stuff. I mean, I'm flicking through, what do you reckon, 30, 40, maybe, maybe
wait,
more.
They're all just starting options.
Yeah, those are just the body shapes. Maybe 50, maybe what we are now, 50, here's stars, maybe 50. Oh, and now we're on to hollow bodies and acoustic. So I don't know, what you reckon, 60?
There's probably 60 body shapes there.
There might be 100 guitars there.
Who knows? Well, certainly basses is as big. So and they do modern stuff.
There's only
traditional...
two shapes though.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Well, they do actually do traditional stuff as well, which is quite nice. And you can spec something up to be traditional. But just to give you an example, I'll talk you through sort of quickly how this is going. I'm gonna select a guitar. I'll select the AM6, which is just a relatively sort of straight up.
That one looks like it's made out of a railway sleeper.
Yes, that one does. Now, when you select a guitar, you can go onto the guitar builder. This is quite rudimentary, the actual guitar builder side of things, because it's all text based, but it's fine. You can sort of go through and pick what you want. So you can choose, in most cases, a right or left handed version. That'll be the first thing that you select. From then, you can select your body and neck woods. You can select maple neck and an alder body as the standard with no extra money. But of course, if you want, ash, koa, you can go koa neck and body. You can have black limber. neck and body. Like there are loads. There's like a maple neck with a walnut body, and these are all between $50 and $100 on top of your starting price.
The cover is an extra $500.
Oh, is it? Oh, yeah. I didn't see that. Yeah, and then you have a top wood option as well. You can also choose bindings if you want. So that's sort of just your first step. Then you've got an option of a top coat, and then you choose between standard finishes. And they also have translucent colours on there as well, bursts, and you can also do the back separately if you want. All four, by the looks of it, some of the colours are free upgrades between $30 and $400 ranging, but they have some amazing colours, including the Kiesel Racing Orange and Racing Green, which are two of my favourites. Matt, you'll be very pleased to know that in translucent colours, they do have a translucent pearl pink, which is one of the coolest looking
colours very good.
Have ever seen. But they've got, I mean, so we're not even on spec yet. You get to the neck, headstock and fingerboard options.
Oh my word.
And you can choose between, like, you can choose different 5 or 7 piece neck constructions, as in you can choose what the sandwich is.
Right.
Which is bonkers.
So what we're saying is essentially a lot of customization.
Yeah, sorry, I know this is going on a little bit, but
there's a lot to choose from.
Yeah, you choose fingerboard radius, you choose frets, you choose side dots, you choose the inlay material. Oh, by the way, inlay material. Yes, you can get Kiesel Racing Green block inlays.
No one wants that.
That everyone wants that. That's exactly what I put on my spec. And then you know, you choose the pickups, the pickup color, and you can choose sort of custom.
Can you get Racing Green pickup covers?
Oh, I really hope so. Hardware, strings, some miscellaneous bits and bobs. Anyway, so I haven't really selected very much going through. I've kept it relatively standard, and this guitar is $1,259.
Handbuilt in the US of A.
Yeah. Ridiculous. So that's kind of, yeah, sorry that one went on a little bit, but I really do recommend everyone going onto kieselguitars.com and just mocking themselves up, whatever they want. Yes, they're a very modern company. Great if you're into modern guitars, or even people who are into PRS and things like that. But I also think there are some cool traditional options on there.
I mean, there's 50 different guitar shapes.
There is something for everyone on there.
Should find something. Yeah. Definitely. Definitely. Should we do some questions?
Questions. Damn it.
Jay, are there any questions from the live Amplify chat?
There is, yeah. There was a couple of questions, actually.
Okay.
The first question...
Have we got anything for Ed?
We do, actually. Wow, yes, kind of, indirectly. But I think probably one that you could probably answer. So Joe in the chat says, not overly relevant to the current chat. I actually disagree. But do you guys have any tips for having two guitarists in the band? A lot of the time we get too much volume, and it doesn't sound great. So yeah, how does Beach Slang go about having the two guitars and having them cut through enough so that there's enough definition between the two?
You know, that's a little bit of a difficult question to answer, because I'm on stage and not in the crowd hearing it.
Sure.
I think the start would be, and I would assume you do this, is flank the amps on each side of the stage. If they're next to each other or on top of each other, it's just going to be a wall of sound that's just mush. I would assume you've already started with that. And chances are, if you're only basing this off what it sounds like from the stage where you're playing, it's probably not as bad as you think in the crowd, because once those amps cone out and you're standing out 10, 15 feet away from the band, you can hear more definition than you'd probably suspect being on stage a foot or two away. And you've all played in two bands with two guitars,
yeah.
Correct?
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, what do you all think?
I mean, I guess this comes up every now and again, and one of the best things that you can do, is have different style guitars. So with you guys it works quite well, because mm-hmm. although you're both playing although James and Ruben are both playing humbucker guitars, James has obviously got the big resonant
he's got the semi-hollow body, yeah.
And then Ruben's playing a Les Paul traditional, so it's all like chug but mm-hmm. you know, it's very very chunky sounding.
They're very different tones.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
That's another thing, is
of course, yeah. And that's like the best thing you can do as far as I'm concerned, is just try and have two very different setups. So like if you can get away with one person using single coils and one person using humbuckers, then that is the best way to get the most amount of definition for the least amount of hassle, I think.
Yeah, tonal variation. I think that's key.
Definitely. Yeah. Two different amps, and
people playing different things as well, I think, a lot of the time.
For sure.
It's like,
yeah,
you get a lot of two guitar bands, and it is cool to hear that, like, that big wall of sound of two guitars just hitting power chords, you know, exactly the same. But they don't sound any different. If what you're looking for is like separation, then just make the guitars play different things, I think, is,
yeah,
kind of the basic,
for sure, yeah, yeah,
thing. So, any more questions from Amplify?
There was another question, which is a bit more of a, I guess, a personal question, where I think...
How do we put up with Joe Brandon every week?
Well, yeah, isn't it just...
No, yes, Joe, I do shave it.
Joe, I thought you were great, man.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that.
We had a question from Harry, I think it was, earlier. I've lost it now. He just wanted to know what acoustics we play, what we recommend, because he doesn't hear us talk about them very much.
We never talk about our acoustic guitars.
We're not
guitars.
Very acoustic-y.
Matt Knight, do you want to talk about your acoustic guitar first?
Yeah. So I've owned a few, and I've still stuck with the main acoustic guitar I bought in 2001, I think, or 2000. I bought a Garrison G4 acoustic from the shop that I worked in at the time every Saturday, and it's Canadian built. They don't make them anymore. All solid woods, and I took it to college when I moved to Brighton, and absolutely everyone played it. It got smashed around, and it just made it sound really warm and really lovely, and you just... You only get that from continually playing an acoustic guitar. And the only guitar that I've ever come close to sounding amazing as this one is the Taylor 8-string baritone that I played.
Oh, that was so weird.
Yeah, well, because it had, obviously, the D and the G were doubled up, and then everything was baritone, so it sounded, like, amazing and open and lovely. But I've every time I own an acoustic or pick up another acoustic, I just think, the one I've got now is just too good, and I'd never ever buy another acoustic, I think, realistically.
What body shape is the acoustic you have?
It's just a dreadnought. It's just a dreadnought shape, so great for rhythm. Works well for kind of some lead playing, finger picking. That kind of covers all of that. It's not as bright because it's not like a kind of maple top or anything like that, so it doesn't cut through in the top end for like finger picking. But I like that because if you go for, like, some people get like a full mahogany acoustic, and the problem with that is that then they're too, for me, they're too boomy, so yeah, then they don't cut through as well.
Too
so
dark.
For me, like, dreadnought kind of just works. That's why I really like the Martin D18, because it's just a good mix of kind of that classic sort of warm Martin sound, but it's in a dreadnought shape, so it cuts through a little bit more as well.
Definitely. Joe Branton, what do you use?
I really like small bodied acoustics. I really like Parlors. At the moment I've got an Epiphone Caballero.
Oh yeah, I forgot that you had that.
So they it was the first, it's a reissue of the first guitar that Epiphone made after they were bought by Gibson. And yeah, they're super cool little parlor guitars with like a rosewood binding on them in sort of a all mahogany. They're great. But if I was buying again, I'd stick with parlor, but I'd be stuck between Simon and Patrick. They introduced their series called Trek, which were all Canadian solid woods and
spruce, I think.
Yeah, thank you. But they made them affordable by not finishing it, anything the rosette is burnt on rather than being designed on there, and they released a folk, a parlor, and probably a dreadnought, I'm not sure. Maybe it was a jumbo, and they're all $299, all of them. And so absolutely brilliant. And the other one is Faith. I really like the Faith stuff.
I was going to say, the Faith parlor guitars are very good.
Yeah, so I went over to their factory in Wales recently.
You did.
And had a look around and tried out a load of their stuff. And they they do a series they called Naked, which is very much their take on the Simon and Patrick. Well, I think they came out slightly before the Simon and Patrick Treks, actually. But it's the same sort of thing. And I love that idea on an acoustic, just a no-nonsense... I don't really like...
Just a utility guitar.
Yeah, exactly. But then if you've got all the money in the world, buy a Gibson L1.
Yeah. Yeah, or a little Bluesmaster or something. Yeah. Really nice. Jay Cross, do I need to ask about your acoustic guitar?
I've got this great guitar, which I got about 6 or 7 years ago. There was this period of time, a good friend of mine, I don't know what happened to him, but
I think your friend really hates it when people like bang on the table.
He needed help moving house, and he couldn't afford to get anybody with a van, And so he needed his mate with a car to come give him a hand. And he went, oh, look, I just, so much stuff I'm getting rid of. And he went, oh, that acoustic. I went, oh, I love that. If you don't want it anymore. And he went, this person went, oh, yeah, you can have it as payment for helping move house.
I mean, he was you know how what a stressful time moving house is, probably in some emotional distress. Probably not
joking.
Not the time to make bad, you know, choices about giving away nice acoustic guitars or anything.
May I interject as the American here?
Okay.
Yeah.
In the country I'm from, that sounds like a legally binding contract of transfer.
There we go.
You know, that was a verbal agreement.
Not fit to stand trial, I think, is the term there.
So I've got a Taylor Baby, and I don't really like acoustic guitars very much.
So not even bothered about it.
Brilliant. I've never been a huge fan of how they sound. I've always preferred even unplugged the sound of an electric guitar. I think that they're more playable at home. I'm just not a huge fan of acoustic guitars, is the long and the short of it. Or at least I wasn't until I went to the Martin Factory, which is in Nazareth, Pennsylvania. I did, yeah.
James, our singer, lives a mile away from there.
Yeah, because it's in the valley, isn't it?
Exactly, yeah.
You should definitely go if you get a chance, because they do a tour. And I've spoken about it before.
Wait for
on
that
the
beach slang unplugged.
Yeah.
There you go. Nah.
Honestly, if ever you're in the northern Pennsylvania area, go to
Pacific.
I mean, it's like 2 hours north of Philly?
It's a hike, yeah. A
couple hours west of New York?
Yeah, just as far, 2 hours from New York.
So, like, it's not that far, and it's a really, really great day out. And it really did sort of reinvigorate my interest in acoustic guitars. I mean, they probably didn't want me to go home and then start talking about my Taylor a huge amount, but
I mean,
you know,
it's not your Taylor, is it?
Well, it's not yours
anyway
anymore.
Anyway,
I'd love to take it home, guys.
You would actually fit that in the hand luggage, probably.
Nice. What do you unscrew the neck?
Ooh.
You can unscrew the neck. What do you play, Edge? Have you got an acoustic guitar at home?
You know, when I was 18, I was, for my birthday, my mom got me some sort of pawn shop guitar, which very quickly the high E tuner broke, and I haven't gotten it fixed, I mean, over the past 8 years. But then I just got an Epiphone Casino Coupe, so kind of like one of the smaller full hollow bodies. And that's great. So, you know, I just play that all the time now.
Which is the 339-sized
exactly.
Casino.
Yep.
They've
so,
just
yeah.
started doing those again in
yeah.
a new color.
Yeah. Yeah, I have the natural with the white pickguard.
Oh, beautiful.
When we came over in January, we toured with the band Pedal, and Gibson lent us some backup guitars. That was one of them. And I was thinking about getting the Casino. I wanted something hollow body. And then when I saw the Coupe, I was like, you know, this is so much better. Not as bulky.
Yeah, well, cool.
Because I'm a big fan of the smaller body acoustics as well. And I think I'm going to look into that soon. So when you recommended that parlor, I'm definitely looking into that when I get back.
There's
someone in the Amplify chat has also said thanks, Joe, for that, because they are also into the idea of the Epi parlor. So that was Nate Zero was into that. It's a nice one.
There is a sad. Oh, there is a good ending to the sad tale of Taylor. Woe
oh,
of
God.
Someone stealing a good friend's acoustic from underneath them, and they were in a time of emotional distress. Is that friend went and got a better small Taylor acoustic. Yeah, I play the Taylor
GS
Mini.
That's a great guitar.
Which is not quite a smaller body. I guess it's like a grand concert, but smaller. Mm. It's just a bit nicer, basically.
I think they're absolutely brilliant.
They are. I think it's the best value acoustic guitar you can buy. They are phenomenally well built. They look cool.
Considering they do a Koa one as well.
Yeah, there's
yeah.
a Koa
like
version
the
of
Koa
available.
One is
ridiculous
all
money.
About
the Koa. Yeah, yeah. They're, I mean, they're about what, £400, something like that.
They come with
no,
a Taylor
no,
soft bag
the,
as well.
The normal GS Minis are $469.
Okay.
I think $539 if you want one with electrics, and just under the £600 mark if you want one in Koa.
Yeah, they're
I remember right.
They're absolutely stunning. I think that's the way to go if you've got a little bit more money to spend, you know, over something like the Epiphone.
Yeah.
But those, I do like those Epiphone Caballeros.
They are cool. I do sort of regret the choice. I wish I'd just spent an extra couple of £100 or £100 on getting a Simon and Patrick. Really, I liked how bling the Epiphone was at the time, but I think Simon and Patrick have got it at the moment.
There we go. We've totally run up to time on the podcast, so we need to wrap things up. We're going to do a Patreon episode as well. Ed, do you want to stick around for the Patreon episode?
I would love to.
Cool. We're going to talk about the Reading and Leeds headliners and their gear and how to sound like them if you don't have quite as much money as Flea or Anthony Kiedis, if you're on,
or Matt Knight apparently,
or yeah, Matt Knight, who you know, who's just giving away his pedals to world famous rock stars, you know.
Yeah. If you want to take this,
indeed, yeah, yeah, Ed, you can have. Yeah, I mean, Jay's got plenty of stuff he doesn't use. You can take away that.
I've got this Digitech Jam Man that I don't use. Yeah,
most of this stuff is mine.
I believe that's Joe's. God. Anyway, if you want to hear that, patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $5 a month, you get an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds content every week. From $10 a month, you become one of our executive producers, and you get your name read out on the podcast every week, as these people have. Doom, doom, doom,
Steve
doom,
Markham, Tony doom, Blair, doom, Carlos Manja, Andrew Marco, Mark Cross, J.D. Short, David Carroll, Andy McKenzie, Brad Pitt, Paul Corrigan, Jack Godfrey, Jack Conroy, Will Clare, Scott O'Brien, Matt Quine, Phil Thompson, Rory Anstis, Moo Gravett, Colin Anderson.
There we go. That was probably the most professional backing track we've done so far.
No, it's really good.
Help
yeah.
of an actual, you know, rock star fella.
Did you hear how many celebrities I got in?
You did. You slipped a few in there. I heard that. I'm not that fussed this week because it's, you know, it's a bit of a different episode. Yeah, so it's all good.
I haven't thanks seen Tony Blair complain.
Indeed.
Or Brad Pitt.
Indeed. So, yeah, thanks to everyone who contributes to Patreon. You help us keep the lights on here at Guitar Nerds HQ, a.k.a. Jay's Flat. Yeah, it helps us do the podcast every week. If you want to join in the conversation, you can. Facebook.com/groups/guitar nerds forum. You can also join us on Amplify live every week. Ampli.fi/guitar nerds. Follow us on Twitter @guitar nerds, Instagram @guitar nerds. Where else? We were at Periscope for a bit.
Periscope.
We used to be on there.
Yeah.
YouTube.com /guitar nerds videos. Mm-hmm. And you can follow us individually @Mark_random, @Matt_Nicey, @JAYBN1, and @Joseph_900. Ed, where can people find out about Beach Slang?
@Beach Slang.
It really, just @Beach Slang.
No one has swiped a name from us yet.
Okay,
beating
that's
us
good.
To it.
No one's, you're not squatting on the Beach Slang name.
Certainly not.
It's not Beach Slang USA.
Beach Slang Band.
Oh, yeah.
Nope, just straight.
@Beach Slang.
Beach Slang Official.
Where can people go if they want to hear stuff?
You can do YouTube. You can do Bandcamp. If you go to our website, beachslang.com, plenty of links there. SoundCloud, I think every avenue. For nice. Streaming music on the internet, you know, Spotify, iTunes, iMusic.
When's the new record out?
September 23rd, that's true, yeah, in the next 3.5 weeks.
What's
LP2? A Loud Bash of Teenage Feelings. So LP2 coming out.
Nice.
I always say our name, the titles of the records wrong, so I'm glad I got that one out. 3.5 weeks, it's crazy. We have a second video dropping soon, hopefully within the next week or two.
We'll have to get you all in a room and do a podcast.
November 10th,
there's a Brighton show.
Okay, another tour in November, basically.
Four weeks, UK.
I recommend UK go to every show except the Brighton one, because that person could probably just sell maybe one of the guitars they've stolen and make the same money. And
but I think we should. The Brighton show is at the Haunt on the 10th of November. I think what we'll try and do is do like a proper pedalboard showcase.
Oh yeah, let's
with Ruben and James.
Ruben would be thrilled to talk about it.
Yeah, we can do that. Definitely. That sounds awesome.
I'll give you a visual to what I spoke about earlier.
Yeah, cool.
Sounds good. And with that, we should end this episode. Come join us on the Patreon episode, and we'll talk about the Red Hot Chili Peppers and who are the
Biffy
other?
Clyro.
Biffy Clyro and Foles, who I know nothing about. So you guys will have to do the legwork on that one. So thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
Cheers, gang.
Farewell.
Bye-bye.
Au revoir. Bye. Goodbye.